I'm Paige Albiniak, editorial director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. This episode of the Daily Brief Podcast is presented by Tiny Hero. No matter what your story or genre, we've got bold vision, fresh ideas, and unconventional creative. Just when you need us, we'll be your hero. At Promax BDA, the conference in Los Angeles, I had the privilege of moderating a panel of marketers who've risen to the top of their professions during the CMO to CEO session. The panel included Diane Nelson, president of DC Entertainment and president of Warner Brothers Consumer Products, Guy Slattery, co-president and general manager of Viceland, and Adam Stotsky, president of E! Entertainment and Esquire. Each of them talked about where they came from, where they are now, and how what they learned in marketing is helping them in their current leadership roles.
Hi, good afternoon. You stole a little bit of my thunder because I was going to do a little promo for the Daily Brief podcast and our redesign, but just encourage you guys to check it out. I'm so honored today to moderate this panel with these three amazing people. So I'm just going to introduce them left to right. So on my left is Diane Nelson. She is president of DC Entertainment, president of Warner Brothers Consumer Products. Next to her, I have Guy Slattery, co-president and general manager of Viceland. And next to Guy, I have Adam Stotsky, president of E! Entertainment. You can clap now. So we carefully selected this panel to talk to people who have been marketers, have been in the industry, and have used those marketing skills and talents to rise to the highest level. So I'm excited and interested to talk to them today about their experience and share that with you guys. It's a quick panel, so in 1 minute or less, please sum up your whole life. No, in 1 minute or less, please tell me, just tell me what you, where you got your start up to. We're going to talk about where you are now, so stop before you get to where you are now.
It's literally impossible for me to do that in a minute. So I'll start it with advertising and English major from Newhouse School at Syracuse. Went to Disney for a few years. Worked at Foot, Cone & Belding in advertising. Went to Disney for a few years and have been at Warner Brothers for 21 years, where I've had different jobs every 2 to 3 years over that course of time with a couple of extensions in between. So very fortunate to have a lot of different opportunities and variety of work that went from marketing and ultimately into business management.
Yeah, I was talking to Diane backstage and she and I could just do 2 hours on her background, but we aren't gonna do that. So Guy.
So I started off as a kid booking the facilities for an on-air promo department, and I suddenly realized that was a position of power, because everyone wants a good editor and a good time slot. So I used to bribe people to teach me how to do promos, became an on-air creative, basically, you know, making promos and spots. You know, and then became a creative director at a network, eventually being at National Geographic Channel, and so moved that into a broader marketing role at Nat Geo globally, and then more recently at A&E for A&E Networks and History. And then recently I moved to Vice to run Viceland. And full disclosure, I've never been a CMO or a CEO, so I feel a bit of an imposter up here. But
you need to leave the panel.
The highest level. Like Diane, I started my career in the advertising agency business. Spent about 6 years at an agency called Fallon in Minneapolis and in New York. Spent a little bit of time at Discovery Networks in between New York and Bethesda. And then happened upon a chance encounter with a woman named Bonnie Hammer in 2001. I've been at NBC Universal for about 16 years. First in marketing roles, sci-fi, NBC, and then more recently, G4, Esquire, and E!
Okay, so similarly, now we're gonna go back and tell me what you do now in a similar time frame. I know it's very hard, but as president of DC Entertainment, president of Warner Brothers Consumer Products.
So my role with DC Entertainment has been a continuation of what I learned in marketing, because it's primarily about brand management and managing IP. DC Entertainment is the home of all of the DC, Vertigo, and Mad magazine brands, characters, properties, including Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman, which will now be said in that order as opposed to the other way around. So I and my team oversee, we still publish 1,300 comic books, physical comic books a year. We also work across all of Warner Brothers to adapt those characters and properties into films, television, games, consumer products, short form video, et cetera, et cetera. And then I also oversee, but have an amazing president operating our consumer products division named Pam Lifford, who spent a number of years at Disney. We work there too to make sure that we're maximizing the brands. DC is a major part of that, but we have many, many other properties. And as Steve and I were talking about backstage, I think consumer products has become such an experiential extension of entertainment, storytelling, and marketing, and so it's a bit of a natural fit.
Go ahead.
Yes, so I run Viceland, which is the TV channel from Vice Media, which only launched just over a year ago. So a lot of people thought it was a little crazy, a digital company, you know, getting into regular old linear TV. But I look after the network, so that's everything from programming to marketing to scheduling to sales and legal and finance and S&P and all those things that you have to do. But basically, running a big team to run this network day to day.
Right. Yeah.
So what I do as president of E! Is I lead a team that hopefully at their best excites and entertains the pop culture fan in all of us. That's what E! Is really focused on. And we do that around the world. E! Is distributed in 157 countries around the globe. Most of the content that travels around the world originates from the team based on the universe a lot. And so, you know, my principal role is to keep folks focused on, you know, our strategic goals, how we're going to be evaluated, who our customers are, what they're thinking about this brand, and how we can create, you know, deep and engaging relationships with them that can extend from long-form storytelling to short-form storytelling, news content, experiences, events, and everything in between.
Yeah. So, all right, so now we're going to bring those two things together. So you got your start in marketing or in that realm, and you moved up to a leadership role. What did you bring from marketing that applied directly to what you do now in leadership? And just to mix it up, I'll start at the end.
Yeah, I think marketers are uniquely suited to rise to a general management function for a couple of reasons. I think first and foremost, the ability to lead creative teams against problems is really what marketers are kind of built for, and how they're DNA is wired. And that really is the DNA, I think, that sits across all of these brands, whether it's DC, Vice, or E. These are creative enterprises, creative ideas, and the people that populate those organizations and those enterprises need to be inspired and motivated and led in a certain way. And I think the skills that you learn as a marketer, pulling disparate groups together against a problem, I think uniquely set CMOs up for broader general management roles. I think that first and foremost. I think equally important is a real deep understanding of what our audiences are all about, how they're wired, and how you can pull apart and parse different data sources to understand how consumers are viewing your content, how they're engaging with your content, where they're engaging with their content. I think uniquely sets marketers up for broader general management roles, for sure.
What, and for you, Diane, what do you think specifically you could bring from marketing into what you do now?
I think you said it beautifully, actually. I pretty much covered right there. what I would add, I suppose, is understanding both the consumer and the product in a uniquely deep way, and that, of course, becomes more important in today's landscape with direct-to-consumer being so important. But in the case of my roles, it's borne out in large part because I have to understand consumers, what they're looking for, what matters in storytelling, in product, and similarly want to make sure that we are tapping into the strongest aspects of our characters or our IP in doing so. So I think that understanding and appreciation for what is a consumer looking for, and at the same time knowing your own product and how you can make sure that it is adapted and served up the right way is key, in addition to the leadership aspects.
Just to follow up on that, so you talk about knowing what the consumer is looking for. How much do you think it's you knowing what the consumer is looking for versus you creating what the consumer is looking for?
Yeah, it's a great question. It has to be both. In a creative business, we don't use, for example, data to dictate creative stories. Creative storytelling is art. We believe that. We have the best people in Warner Pictures and TV and games who are experts in doing that. What we try to bring from DC is a more of a generalist appreciation for how they work. And when you're talking about things like fan engagement, knowing who the core fans are, how we broaden out from there, how we support our various businesses in doing that. That's where and we do a lot of research to understand our consumers and what they're looking for. And that can be everything from we want to see more female superheroes to we want more content on demand. So I think that's where it's really more about knowing your consumer. I would not suggest that it's about having your consumer dictate how you tell a story, because I think that takes the magic out of it.
And just to stick here for a second, and I was going to ask this later, but I think it's a good time to ask you about Wonder Woman. You guys know Wonder Woman's done great this weekend, open to $223 million global box office. I guess the first female superhero movie, right? So in deciding to do that movie, I know it's been in development for a long time, but where do you think that movie sits in that nexus that we just talked about, what the consumer is looking for versus what you're creating for the consumer?
It's a perfect example of both. So, well, I'll start with the creative portion, which is that movie has been in development or has not come out until now because we had not yet found Patty Jenkins. Patty Jenkins is the director. Anyone who's listened to her talk about this, she was born to do this movie. She loves the character. She had a vision for what she wanted to do, and she realized it perfectly. In addition to that, just it's in the zeitgeist right now. We could feel it building over the course of the last year, year and a half, whether it's female empowerment, whether it's a need to see hope and optimism and love and compassion, whether that comes from a female or a male, to be able to go in and experience humor and heart, but also, frankly, kick-ass action. It's a great movie in that regard, too. I think the two things came together, and we really started to see last week, outside of the traditional metrics of tracking and so forth, just the buzz was building. People were so ready for this movie, and I think that has really borne out over now as we're hearing the responses and how thrilled people are to take their children and to both girls and boys, and to, for women, it's giving me goosebumps talking about it, literally. But it is a deeply emotional thing to see a film with a character with that much strength, who also respects and loves women. There's equality between her character and Steve Trevor. But I think that's the answer, is the two things came together perfectly. It was the right time for this movie, and any sooner might not have been.
Yeah, it's interesting, because you can't really dictate timing.
Yeah.
So it just happened. It's all great happenstance. All right, so I ignored Guy. So Guy, what have you brought from your marketing career that you feel like is helping you in your president GM role?
I just think anyone in marketing has a unique opportunity within, particularly in a big company. You're actually probably the most connective department within that company. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you get to like connect all the divisions and you work with everybody. So I think it gives you a really good sort of 360 view of how entertainment and content companies work. So I think, you know, having that knowledge, I think everyone in marketing should realize, you know, and utilize that when they're in their role, realizing that of all the people in the company, they probably have the most visibility into what's going on. And, you know, I think that just gets you good experience for when, you know, you move to a broader management role.
So I never do this in panels, but just show of hands, how many of you guys as marketers feel like you sit in the middle of everything and are sort of the connective tissue at your company, right? Some, maybe half, get more connected. No.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so.
Do you mind if I echo that? I think that's such a great point, and it is absolutely the reason I have the job I have now. It's the reason I oversaw Harry Potter for 12 years. All of it came from the ability to collaborate, know how all these various parts of the business worked, and I wouldn't have been offered these roles if I hadn't had that. So I think it's great, great thoughts.
Yeah. All right, so then sort of the reverse of that, what, when you got into your current role, did you feel like, I don't really have the skill and I'm gonna have to get up to speed really quick, and I'm gonna start with you.
With me. I think just for me, more tactically, just because Vice is kind of an unusual company, like in that it makes all its own shows. So, you know, you're not only sort of running a network, you're running a massive production company, and that's something like the other networks that I'd worked at hadn't necessarily done. So, you know, that was, you know, sort of a learning curve. And then I think, you know, you have to sort of step back and realize you're not just the marketing guy anymore and not just keep focusing on that. And that's, when you move role, you have to remember just hire people, let them do it and focus on some of the the other things, because the instinct is to go with what you're comfortable with, and that's probably the area you shouldn't focus on.
Yeah, that's definitely a big trap that as folks progress in their career is sort of, you know, having the ability to kind of let go of what, you know, of the skill set that kind of brought you there, the functional role that brought you there, and actually letting other people kind of rise to the occasion and kind of learning different approaches to marketing. I mean, I think I didn't know a lot, right? And I think, you know, the recognition that you don't know everything is a pretty important, I think, a really valuable skill, and actually understanding how to get the most out of, like, a CFO, for example, right? The sort of easy knock on marketers is that they don't really have a good grip on the financials. They're sort of great spenders of marketing, or pardon me, great spenders of money, not necessarily great generators of revenue. And so, you know, learning how to use program makers, program schedulers, CFOs, heads of HR to their respective most, I think can help fill in any gap that you might have. And I think it's a real eye-opening experience to kind of sit in the role and really kind of recognize, actually, you don't know everything, but it's okay, as long as you have the wherewithal to acknowledge it and to actually lean into the folks that are masters of those respective areas of responsibility.
Does that feel scary to be like,
no,
I don't really know this area, and I'm just
going
to handle it?
No, Steve Jobs famously said, you know, A players hire and use A players. I'm not going to say that I'm an A player from the stage. But
not
I
on a stage, an A player.
you have to hire people and empower people who are masters at their role, for sure. You have to be comfortable not knowing everything, but trusting the folks that work for you. That's a real challenge and a real skill. Sure.
And I know you mentioned.
I can echo that one because I had never read a comic book before I got this job, literally. So I had to and very much enjoyed in the formation of DC Entertainment, restructuring it, putting the company together, hiring an executive management team that was comprised of some of the most talented comic book creators in the business. My chief creative officer, Jeff Johns, our publishers, Dan DiDio and Jim Lee. The credibility that I needed the company to have that I wasn't going to have with our core fans had to come from all of them. And my faith, I still, 7 years into it, I'm struggling with how to follow the continuity of parallel universes and the multiverse and continent. You know, it's complicated. So I depend very much on them, but I do believe that's ultimately when you get to a position, should you choose to, of general management, the key is being a good leader and having the strongest people around you that you possibly can, supporting them, giving them the encouragement and trusting that they know better than you, in my case.
Yeah, and getting out of their way. You know, getting out
exactly.
of their way.
Exactly.
It's a real
pitfall.
It's a real challenge. Giving them the tools, the resources, the trust, but then just stepping back and actually letting the magic happen. And being comfortable with that is challenging on a daily basis, but that's how you get to brilliance, you know. Keeping really good people motivated and engaged and driven and focused on the challenge, and then just staying the hell out of it.
Do you feel like, as a marketer, that you had those skills, meaning like to keep people motivated and challenged and driven? Is that something that you brought to the job just because that's how you are, or is that something you had to learn also?
For me, it's probably more who I am, and might have been why I was drawn to what I was in college and subsequently, because I'm an interpersonal, more emotionally intelligent probably than in IQ focused. I hope that as a marketer, your strength is communication skills among many other things, and I think that's probably served me well.
Mm-hmm. You know, and marketing teams these days are some of the biggest, most complex teams at companies. And to manage, you know, you're managing a creative team, but also you know you have to have very strategic people and a lot of data and science behind it. So I think it's a great learning ground because it's a complex organization. So just when you go to a bigger level, it's just slightly bigger than that. But I think the marketing role, the senior marketing role, that sets you up very well for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, at least for me, it's about problem solving, right? The sort of more difficult, it's very rare that sort of folks are showing up in front of my office with like good news, right? it's usually the exact opposite, right? Yeah. And so, you know, I think the marketing training hones your problem solving skills, right? It is all about solving a problem. And I think increasingly that's what these roles are about, which is, you know, solving the business problem, solving the audience problem, solving the sort of operational, you know, operational problems, sort of mounting a, you know, mounting a network. I think the, at least for me, my marketing background certainly helped hone that skill for sure.
All right, I'm going to switch gears a little. Millennials. So that's a group everyone's going after. Obviously, all of you guys are definitely going after that group in pretty concerted ways. What are some things that you're doing right now to really reach millennials? And I'll start with Guy.
Yeah, well, you know, the Vice brand, that's, you know, what it's built on.
That's your thing.
Yeah, that's our thing, you know. And we have a pretty simple philosophy, you know. It's if you want a younger audience, hire a younger audience, you know. And so we hire young people, you know, and get them to make the stuff that they love. And, you know, and sort of get out of the way. And you know, and hopefully it finds an audience, you know. And if you come to the Vice office, you know, it's, in the median age is about 25, you know.
Do they work?
I'm dragging the median age quite a lot.
But,
no, they work hard.
You break the curve.
Yeah, I break the curve.
Joking.
You know, and it's just, you know, we want people to make stuff that they're passionate about, and we don't really, you know, we don't try and make stuff with the audience in mind. I think people at Vice make it with themselves in mind, and then, you know, it then resonates with that younger audience.
Where do you predominantly find your audience finds your content? At Viceland, specifically.
Well, you know, all over. But so now we have a TV channel, but obviously it's a massive digital business as well. You know, we're huge on, you know, big on Snapchat and Facebook and YouTube. So we just want to be a very platform agnostic business, which is why we went into television. You know, some people thought it was counterintuitive, but we were like, there's still big audiences there. Mm-hmm. We want to be everywhere where there's millennials, and a lot of millennials that watch TV, counter to the rumors. So, very platform agnostic. And I think, you know, that's the great thing about a company like Vice is, you know, an idea can come in or a piece of talent, and we can decide which platform's the best place for it, or incubate, you know, talent on digital platforms and then move them to the bigger platforms.
And at E, it's obviously also a millennial-focused brand.
Yeah, millennials and increasingly Gen Z, for example. Snapchat, you know, 3/4 of our audience on Snapchat is between the ages of 12 to 24. Right, this is Gen Z. It's not millennials anymore. Millennials are having, you know, they have careers, they're building families, they're buying homes.
So who cares about them?
Yeah, they're important. You know, for us, like Viceland, you know, we think about E as an idea first and foremost, and we think about platform secondarily. We think about how do we tell stories, whether it's about the Kardashians or about what's happening, you know, every night in pop culture news or those big seminal pop culture moments. We think about how do we tell the best stories, the most insightful stories, the most impactful stories, first and foremost, and then we think about how do we optimize those stories for any and every platform we can distribute them through. So, you know, one way to put a fine point on that, about 2.5 years ago, E had a group that was focused on creating a nightly show, 7 o'clock, entertainment news, kind of undifferentiated versus Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood, The Insider. They all kind of look the same. At the same time, we had a digital team that had built itself into a real sizable operation, and ostensibly they were covering the same kinds of content. So we collapsed the two organizations into one, actually put the digital leadership on top. And now when we think about news, we think about news, and we think about platforms secondarily. We don't think about this is a digital initiative or this is a TV idea. We think about how do we tell the e-news story in the best, most engaging way for Snapchat consumers, which are increasingly Gen Z, or Facebook Live, which is much more of a millennial focus. So, you know, I think first and foremost, again, it is about quality storytelling. It's about understanding your audience and about how they're engaging with these different platforms and then kind of meeting them where they are, as Guy pointed out.
And then for you guys, and you're right, I should be actually asking this question about, I should leave millennials and ask about Gen Z, you're right. But for you guys, it's interesting because you're taking IP that was sort of attractive to millennials' parents, maybe, and then you want to make it newly attractive to millennials and Gen Z. So how do you do that?
A combination of things. One is we work hard to make sure we have segmentation studies that help us understand where each audience, from kids all the way up through baby boomers, frankly, because they are still our audience also, where they are and which platforms we need to be on. One of the great advantages we have with DC is that our characters, particularly the primary ones, let's say, for example, the members of Justice League, are very elastic. So we can create programming for kids that's fantastic and perfectly suited to them. We can have a great producer like Greg Berlanti, who tells a slightly different tonal universe of stories on the CW, or Bruno Heller, who tells Gotham on Fox and it feels entirely different, or Lucifer on Fox. You know, we really are about telling the best stories for the right medium with the right creator, which gives us the most flexibility and, again, the best quality content. But the characters themselves, the attributes, allow you to do that with multiple audiences with the same characters at the same time. And so Batman, which arguably has had over the past few years, whether it's the Nolan trilogy or going back 20 years before that, has a halo effect that still makes it the number one superhero brand out there at retail, because kids, even if they're not going to see some of the edgier Batman films that have preceded us, then they still feel it in the marketplace. They still love what they can experience at retail through consumer products or what we can do for them online with YouTube and others. So it's a combination of all of those factors, but we're very conscious of the fact that with certain of our characters, we have a great opportunity to tell different stories for different audiences.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, how those characters live in sort of those different demographics simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you guys have all said the D word on this panel, which is data. So do you, I'll start with Adam. I just think how people use data is interesting because there's so much focus on it, but it can be, I think, it can be overwhelming, it can be taken too seriously. How do you incorporate data into what you do?
You know, I think apart from the sort of buzzword of it all, right? I mean, it's no different today than it was 20 years ago. There's just more access to different kinds of data sets than ever before, which is interesting and, to your point, overwhelming. I think the point to focus on is actually not data per se, but actually how you use it, what you extrapolate from it, how you interpret it. And I think we focus less and less on data and more on insight, right? So it isn't about sort of holding a mirror up to your audience and kind of playing back what they're telling you they want. It's about sort of understanding what's underneath that data that really kind of helps to guide the creative process and guides business decision making more than anything. So less about data and much more about sort of insight and guidance than anything.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys rely on a lot of data at Viceland?
You know, yeah, I think like everybody does, and you know, and you try and get insights from it. And I think, you know, like I said before, I think what we're kind of lucky we're at Vice in that we can put something online, which is sort of same thing, I'm sure Adam does this too, where the production costs are a little lower, and you can be a bit more experimental, and you can see if it resonates. And you know, a lot of the big shows on Viceland were originally digital series that were just very popular, and so that's like a really basic way of using data. But like, yeah, there's an overwhelming amount of data on how people consume content, and I think you can go down the rabbit hole a bit too much sometimes. But what we're really focused on is what do people like, and you can tell that pretty easily. Yeah.
And my fear of data is that you will follow the data in making a decision instead of maybe going with your creative gut, and so.
Gut's got to kind of trump almost everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of know a stinker when you see it. Mm. You know, no data set's going to tell you that. It may, but I think, your instinct is going to tell you if something is going to be good or isn't. And I think what you can do is you can use data to help sort of validate, help sharpen, help refine, mm-hmm. versus help make decisions, yeah. For sure.
Do you guys rely very heavily?
We do, across Warner Brothers, and DC's an interesting case study of how Warner Brothers uses it effectively, because we're moving more and more into the OTT space across all of our businesses, but even prior to that, there are well over 100 million DC fans in the US, from casual fans to the core fans who are buying everything and reading the books. we know who many of those people are, and we cross-reference them with our video game division, with the Arkham franchise, with our movie division, who knows who's going to see what. We know it from our fan engagement at Comic-Con and through comic books and through our digital ecosystem driven out of DC that works across all our businesses. So for us, it's more about making sure that we are customizing how we talk to those people who we know are already predisposed to liking DC or our characters. How do we make sure they know and have a motivation to go see or buy whatever else we're offering?
Okay, so last questions, lightning round. What piece of advice would you give to our audience today to close out this panel if they're looking to rise up in their career? I'll start with you.
My advice is always don't get too set in one specific plan for your career. Stay open to where new areas of interest might pop up, because if someone had told me 25 years ago that I'd be running a comic book company or even at an entertainment studio or even in LA, I wouldn't have believed any of it. And I, the reason that I've had such a fantastically interesting career at Warner Brothers is different opportunities presented themselves and I went through those doors, usually with support from wonderful people above me as well. But so I would say try, you know where your passion is, but stay open that if there's something over here that interests you, follow it, because it might lead somewhere great.
What would you say?
Yeah, I just say wherever you work, like, make the whole business your business, you know, and you know, just, you know, ask everyone what they're doing and get involved in everything outside of your area, because you can get very just focused on what you do. And I think, again, like I said, I think marketing gives you an opportunity to do that. So I was kind of just assumed I should have an opinion on everything and whether people wanted it or not. And this seemed to work out okay.
Yeah, it worked out. Great. And for you, Adam?
Yeah, no, I think those are two great pieces of advice. I think I would add to those two, stay curious, you know, just never stop learning, never stop asking questions, never stop immersing yourself into different worlds, different experiences, different people, you know, always stay curious, because, you know, you know, you can never stop learning, especially in this business. It's changing on an hour-by-hour basis. There's so much really interesting shit happening on a daily basis. And, you know, the minute you stop learning is definitely the minute you stop growing. So stay curious for sure.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. You guys were excellent. Thank you, guys.
We would like to thank Tiny Hero for sponsoring this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. Tiny Hero, for theatrical, home entertainment, and broadcast campaigns. Trailers, social, TV spots, digital, and sizzles. Just when you need us, we'll be your hero. Check them out at tinyhero.com. Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video Helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Christian Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.